Morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama's Mem. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. As long as Zichron Nishmas Libra Gavrila Bashmuel. We're on Lama Testament base. We're towards the top of the Amud. We're starting three lines down with the words of Ma'amidim Lam Apotropos Litam Legavos Megufo Tanaihi. That's a long sentence that needs a little bit of background. Let's just quickly wrap up, summarize what we saw yesterday, and move ahead in the Gemara today. Yesterday we saw the Mishnah on Lama Testament Aleph, where the Mishnah had a quick discussion regarding what to do with animals that are owned by people who are lav b'nei das, people who do not have their cognitive ability. And so without the cognitive ability, what kind of liability can we hold them to? The answer is really no liability, meaning that if the animal is owned by a cheresh, the animal is owned by a shota, and the animal damages others, the animal is not going to be the person's not going to be liable. The basic requirement of shmirah presupposes that you have the ability to be shomer. And if you don't have the ability to be shomer, so then you're not going to be liable. But the chachamim realize that that's just going to be very difficult. Have a society in which you have people who are just going to have their animals running around. And specifically, I mean, really most of our attention is focused on yisumim. We're talking about now children who are orphaned, unfortunately, and so they don't have parents. So, and they have an estate, and they, you know, and the parents left them an estate, dad left them an estate, and so now they have these animals. So, what are we going to do regarding the protection of their animals, protection from themselves, but also, quite frankly, protection from other people? Meaning, who's going to be held liable and responsible for those animals? So, what we learned back in the Mishnah on Lamed Testament Aleph is that what Basin is going to do is they're going to appoint an apotropos. And so you'll have some sort of custodial figure who is going to be appointed to manage and supervise the entire estate of the children. And the Mishnah went on to say, "Umeidim lehem b'fnei apotropos." This is back on Lamed Testament Aleph, and testimony will be given in front of the apotropos. And in the event now that the animal becomes a muad, so now you're going to be collecting from the estate. We learned yesterday over the course of the Gemara that what the Mishnah means is as follows. The Mishnah is telling us that while the animal's a tam and the animal does damage as a tam, so then it is an uncollectible obligation. You can't go after the yesomim, you can't go after the orphans, and the apotropos himself is not going to be liable. And the reason why, to be quite frank, the Mishnah doesn't say. Meaning the Mishnah just simply says is that if it's a tam, it's an uncollectible obligation. So yesterday we saw, the Rashi says this, is that the reason why the tam becomes an uncollectible obligation is because it's metaltal and it's movables, meaning that where does the tam payment come from? It comes from the animal itself. Well, the animal itself is not karka, it's a movable item, and we don't go after the yisomim, we don't collect from the yisomim for movable items. However, we are going to tell the apotropos that's one, meaning every time the animal damages, we now say, you got to be careful, that was one. And then we say, next time he damages, we go to the apotropos, that's two. Third time, obviously, we go to the apotropos, that's three. Now, now the estate is on the hook. Where now, if the animal was damaged, because payment comes min ha'aliyah, and as we learn, min ha'aliyah means out of pocket, but out of pocket also means that if necessary, property will be collected in order to satisfy that payment. So now we're talking property. Now we can go into the estate of the children in order to pay for that obligation. Now, as we learned yesterday, who exactly pays for that obligation? So your two options are either it goes directly, it comes collected straight out of the estate, or the other suggestion of the Gemara was yesterday, this was Rav Yossi's position, is that the apotropos fronts the money now, and then later in time the apotropos is going to go back and collect from the estate when the children grow up. Either way, that is what we learned in the Mishnah. That as a tam, it's an uncollectible obligation because you're collecting migufo, and then once the animal is a muad, and we're warning the apotropos in order, and the apotropos is there to serve as an address for warning, second warning, third warning, once the animal becomes a muad, so then it becomes an obligation that is collectible. That is what we learned yesterday. Where we're opening up today, and we're on Lamed Testament Beis, we're at the top of the Amud, where we're starting today is the following. Yesterday we said in the Mishnah that if it's a tam, and if it's owned by the Yesomim, and it damages, it's uncollectible. Now what we're about to learn together is, not everyone agrees to that point. Some are going to be of the opinion that, even as a tam, it becomes a collectible obligation. Let's see the Gemara inside, we're on the very top of Lamed Testament Beis. Yisomen. I'm sorry. Umamidim la mapachapas. Latam legavas migufo tanahi. Whether or not an apachapas is appointed so that the animal, when the animal is damaging as a tam, you're going to be collecting from the animal itself, is subject to machlokis tanaim detanya. So we're going to see now a brisa, and in the course of this brisa, after careful analysis of the brisa, we're going to understand that this issue is in fact a machlokis tanaim. Here's the brisa. Shorshin is charshu balav. Vinishtat tu balav, shahachu balav libedina sayam. So if you have an ox where the owner's become a cheresh, the owner becomes a shote, or the owner becomes an absentee owner. In any one of these circumstances, Yehuda ben Nikosi Amar b'simchos harehu b'samuso ad she'yaidu bo b'fnei habalim. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Simchos that the animal is in its tam state until a warning is given in front of the owner. Exactly what that means, stay tuned. Because right now the owner is incapable of receiving a warning. The owner right now is either a cheresh or a shote or an absentee owner. Right? Obviously the brisa couldn't be giving a scenario where the owner becomes a katan. When it comes to aging, it only goes in one direction. It doesn't go in the other direction. So, obviously. But in all these cases, the Gemara quotes the name Simchus. You have to be issuing a warning in front of the owner. Stay tuned. We're going to explain what that means. So, and the Chachamim say, well, no, we don't have to wait till the owner either mentally comes back or physically comes back. In order for the animal to become, to graduate, to matriculate from being a tam to being a muad, so it's very simple. You get an apotropos. He now serves as the address. So you warn the apotropos, and every time after warning the apotropos, that now registers as a warning, warning, warning. And then the next time the animal damages, now we're talking about being a muad. That is the opinion of the Chachamim. Continues the Braisa. Nispakecha cheresh nishta pehashota higdila katan uba uba ala mimidina sayam. Let's say you have these situations where the owner was mentally or physically not here, or now we can insert, or the owner was a child. And in any one of these circumstances, the owner has either mentally returned, physically returned, or maturation standpoint, has now gotten to the point of maturity. In any one of these circumstances, Yehuda ben Nikus Omer of Simchus, Chazer l'samuso, ad she'yaidu bo b'fnei balam. So again, the Braisa in part 2 quotes in the name of Simchus, well, bring the count back to zero. Chazer l'samuso, we're back to now to the tam, and now, only when you warn the owner who's back, and then you warn him three times, then and only then the animal reverts to being a muad. And Rav Yossi Omer Harei Becheskaso. And Rav Yossi says, no, what are you talking about? We've gone through this already. Meaning we've already warned the apotropos on three occasions. And therefore, now that the owner has returned, you know what the status of the animal is? Unchanged. The status of the animal is where it was. It was a muad. It continues to be a muad, even though the owner wasn't either mentally or physically here. But in his absence, we had an apotropos. The apotropos was warned. And so now that the owner's come back, nothing's changed. The animal remains in a state of being a muad. Okay. So far, what we have is a machlokus between Simchus and the Chachamim. And what we really need to do at this point in time is understand the first position of Simchus. Meaning there were two parts of the Braisa. Part one of the Braisa is what happens when the owner disappears, either mentally or physically. The second part of the Braisa is what happens when the owner returns. But what we're focusing now on is the first part of the Braisa. The owner disappears mentally or physically. And the Braisa says that according to Simchus, the animal is in a state of tamim. What does that mean? Amru, my harehu b'samuso dekamer Simchus. So that's exactly the Gemara's question. And ile medolo miyai klal. So if you want to tell me that the animal is simply incapable of becoming a muad, hamin diktani seifa chazor l'samuso, so the Gemara says it can't be. That can't be the pshat behind Simchus, because in the second half of the Braisa, when we talked about his return, what did Simchus say? Just focusing on Simchus. Simchus says that when he returns, so the animal reverts to being a tam. Reverts to being a tam? What does that mean? It means that the animal matriculated to becoming a muad, and then now that the owner's back, okay, so now we're going to set it back at zero, and the animal's going to be a tam. But the fact that we're bringing it back to being a tam means that obviously the animal became a muad. So now, simchus cannot possibly mean that the animal is in perpetuity a tam while there's an absentee owner. Can't mean that. So mechlal de'iyayin. So clearly, what simchus is assuming that the animal becomes a muad. So it only begs the question. In the first half of the braisa, what did simchus mean when he said that the animal is bitamuso? So ela mai harei bitamuso, harei hu bitamimuso. It means the following. It means that while the animal is a tam, every warning is going to register. Every warning is going to count. It just simply means that as a tam, it becomes an uncollectible obligation. Like we said back in the Mishnah. But now what we're learning together is that this is really the opinion of Simchas. And as an interesting aside, our Mishnah is reflecting the opinion of Simchas, which now in the context of this discussion is a Das Yachid. Okay, but still, now that's what we're learning together. That for Simchas, every time you warn the apotropis, it registers. It's just that as long as the owner is an absentee owner, either physically or mentally, so then we're not collecting from the animal. We're not collecting from the tam. So that means that according to Simchus, that the animal's a tam, and while the animal's a tam, this becomes an uncollectible obligation. Now the Chachamim disagree. Now here's the part that we have to really consider. If Simchus is telling us that a tam is an uncollectible obligation, and the Chachamim are disagreeing, so where does that leave us? It means that according to the Chachamim, it becomes a collectible obligation even though the animal is a tam. And the Gemara says exactly that. Alma ma'amida ma'apetrapos atam l'gavos megufo. Now, that means that according to the Chachamim, who argue with Simchas and the Reisha, they're telling us that the tam, the animal that's a tam, even though its owner is either mentally or physically not here, still it becomes a collectible obligation. One can now go after the estate. If it's children, it's an estate. If it's a cherishot, whatever. We can always go after the estate in order to collect this chatzi nezik, in order to collect this half payment. Okay. So now what have we discovered in the braisa? The Simchas and the Chachamim are arguing whether or not an absentee owner, whether the nizak, the damaged party, can go after the estate. Simcha says no, which is really in accordance with our Mishnah, and the Chachamim say yes, which obviously doesn't go like our Mishnah. Now that we've explained the ratio of the Braisa, so now we move on to the second part of the Braisa. In the second part of the Braisa, what are we discussing, what are we debating? When the owner comes back, either mentally or physically, so what now becomes the animal? Is there a reset button when the owner comes back? So what do we learn in the Braisa? That's the machlokes between Simchas and the Chachamim. Simchas says the reset button is hit, and the Chachamim say, it's really Rav Yossi, no, there's no reset button in this case. And v'seifa by Micah Miflegi. And now what the Gemara is going to do is just simply offer the simple pshat in the second part of the Braisa, Rishus Mishane Ike Beinayu. And the question that the debate of the second part of the Braisa is whether or not there's a change of Rishus, change of ownership. Is that hitting the reset button? Simchas Amar Rishus Mishane. Simchas is of the opinion, yep. Once the owner has come back, either physically or mentally, so now it's a new owner, right? It's like when you walk into a restaurant with the sign of under new ownership, right? Basically, I know the service was terrible. I know everything was bad, but you should be expecting something totally new because it's under new ownership. Simchas says that when you have the owner coming back, basically it's the same idea. New ownership. This animal is not going to be the same animal. And so therefore we give the owner, we reset the animal, totally new. Okay, first time it damages, you're back to chasi nezek. Same with the second, same with the third. Fine. And Rav Yossi Savar Rishosein Mishana. And according to Rav Yossi, no. That the change of ownership does not change the status of the animal. The animal has been warned previously three times. The animal now is a muad. The animal continues to be a muad even though it's under new management, even though it's under new ownership. The Rishus is not going to be Mishana. Okay. Adkan, that takes us now through the Braisa. And so, what we have now established since the top of the Amud is that the Mishnah's position that a tam of an estate, our Mishnah says is an uncollectible obligation. What we're learning now is that Simchus is of the opinion that it is a collectible obligation, and the Nizak can go after his the animal for his Chatzi Nezek payment.
To whom are you made?
Without an apotropos, I don't know. In other words, you need an address. There has to be somebody there. So if the Yisomim are, if they're Ketanim, they're not going to be the address. Simchus will tell you, you'll also put up an apotropos. So the only point that Simchus is arguing with is whether or not the Nizak can get paid. Simchus says yes. The Chachamim say no.
There is an
episode. Yeah.
You cannot be married to him.
And you'll be married to him. And so for Simchus, the purpose of being married is to in order so that you can collect. And according to the Chachamim, the only purpose of the I said it reverse. I said it backwards. According to Simchus, the purpose of the apotropos is just to get the animal to being a muad, and according to the Chachamim, the purpose of the apotropos is so that you can collect. Okay. Yeah.
Didn't Rava seem to say only as a muad, not as a tam? The first
Talmud. Yeah, and explaining the Mishnah.
Now we're saying even in time you could collect.
In other words, what now the Gemara is saying is that our Mishnah is reflecting the opinion of Simchus. Meaning, right, Rava on the Amud Aleph was just there to provide Pshat in the Mishnah. Because remember, the Mishnah had a stira. And the first part of the Mishnah sounded like he's Pata Legamri. Second part of the Mishnah sounds like we're setting up an apotropos. Right? So Rava says, okay, so the Pshat is yes and yes. Putter as the tam, but the apotropos so that there's an address for the warning, so that the animal can matriculate to becoming a muad. Right. And now what we're learning is that the Bryce is teaching us is that this is a machlokus, and our Mishnah is the opinion of Simchus. Tanu Rabbanan. Right in the middle of Lamed Tes Amud Beis, we are starting a Bryce of Shorcher Shot Vekatan Shenagach. A shore that belongs to someone who is mentally not here, physically here, mentally not here, and he does negicha Rav Yaakov Mishalim Chatzi Nezek. The Braisa poorly worded. I'm not being critical. I'm just you'll see the Gemara make this point. So the Rav Yaakov Mishalim Chatzi Nezek. Rav Yaakov has to pay Chatzi Nezek. And to which the Gemara says that wording of the Braisa is very poor. What did poor Rav Yaakov do? he's just espousing an opinion. So Rav Yaakov my avidate. So the Gemara comically asked the question: What did poor Rav Yaakov do? So the Gemara says, no, Ela Ema Rav Yaakov Omer Mishan Chatzi Nezek. So the Gemara checks itself, edits itself, and what the Braisa means is that according to Rav Yaakov, you pay Chatzi Nezek. Now b'maya skinan. The question is a really simple question. What? What? In other words, we're now having a discussion, a brisa, that says that if an animal of someone who's physically not there does damage, so the owner pays chatzi nezek. But the brisa does not tell us whether or not this animal was a tam or whether the animal was a muad. So now the Gemara asked a question. So if we're talking about the animal as a tam, well, isn't that kind of obvious? Meaning the tam pays chatzi nezek. Now, if it's a muad and the proper shmir was done, and we're going to be talking in the beginning of the sixth parak regarding proper shmirah, that will be coming up in a couple weeks from now. So there, if you do proper shmirah and the animal gets out, even though proper Shmira was done, so then you're not obligated at all. That's called ones. So klal klal lo by lishlumi. V'idelo avdilei shmira kule nezik by lishlomi. And if the animal is a muad and you didn't do proper shmira, so the owner of the animal has to pay nezik shalem. So basically, what the Gemara wants to know is, I have a brisa. Clearly, there's a point trying to be made, but right now the Gemara says I don't really quite understand what the big to do is of this brisa. Amar Rava. So this is now Rava who's going to say pshat in the brisa. And he's going to really say a major pshat in the brisa, because the way he's going to set up the brisa, we're not going to have one, not two, but three chidushim coming out of this brisa. So Amar Rav al-Olam b'muad, first of all, the brisa is talking about a muad. Already, you feel the chidush coming, because Rav is telling us that we're talking about a muad, and somehow you are going to be paying only chatzi nezek on an animal that damages, that's a muad. So get ready, because it's really a big chiddush. And how's the chiddush work? It goes like this. Okay, so a little bit of background in order to understand, in order for us to appreciate how Rava is going to understand this brisa. Okay, first of all, we're going to start the sixth parak of Baba Kama soon enough, a couple weeks from now, Yitzh Hashem. And we're going to learn together in the beginning of the sixth parak that Rav Yehuda has a position regarding Shmira by animals that is super counterintuitive. Okay, first of all, okay, when we say Shmira, it simply means that I have animals, so I have to pen up my animals. If I don't properly pen up my animals, so then I'm going to be liable. But as we're going to learn in the beginning of the sixth parak together, this is what's called Shmira Pechusa and Shmira Me'ula. There's basically basic Shmira, and then there's upgraded Shmira. And how much Shmira is necessary in order so that my liability is waived? What did I need to do in order to waive my liability? Now, we're going to learn in the beginning of the sixth parak Rav Yehuda's position. Rav Yehuda's position is counterintuitive, and he says like this, that when it comes to a tam, in order for me to have satisfied my obligation of Shmira, I needed to do Shmira Me'ula. Once the animal becomes the muad, I only need to do shmira pchusa in order to satisfy my obligation. Now, obviously, if we were thinking rationally and logically, so we would have said, at least I would have said, exactly the opposite. And the animal's a tam, this was an unexpected event. And so therefore, I only need to do basic shmira. Once the animal's a muad, and now you're expecting the animal to damage, so then I should require shmira mula. So in terms of trying to understand Rav Yehuda's position, now is not the time. And even when we get to the beginning of the sixth parak, we'll make an attempt. But now is not the time to understand. Right now, all we need to do is just simply know. This is Rav Yehuda's position. That when it comes to a tam, you need shmir ma'ula. When it comes to a muad, you only need shmir p'chusa. That's Rav Yehuda's shita regarding the requirement of shmira, the amount of shmira necessary in order to remove you from liability. Okay, now with that stated, let's go to our Gemara, and now let's see how Rava learns Pshat in the Brisa. Brisa says that if you have a animal belonging to somebody who is mentally out of town, so and you're the damaged party, you can receive Chatzi Nezek. And now Rava says, here's how the Pshat's going to work. Hacha b'maiskinan, I'm a Rava, I'll go back a line. Amar Rav Olam b'muad, the animal in question over here is a muad. V'hachem b'maiskin and davdei shmir p'chusav l'avdelei shmir me'ula. And in terms of the amount of shmir that's done, so basic shmira was done, and the animal was a muad. V'Rav Yaakov savala k'Rav Yehuda damer tzad tamuz b'mkom amadis. So now, as far as Rav Yaakov, here we go. Chiddush upon chiddush upon chiddush. Three-tiered chidushim in order to arrive at this conclusion. Number one, says the Gemara, right? Rav Yaakov subscribes to the opinion of Rav Yehuda that Tzad Tamuz Bemkoma Omedes. An issue we already touched on earlier in the Masechta, but we're going to get to say it again right now. And that is, when an animal matriculates from being a tam to being a muad, you could say it in one of two ways. You could say that because the animal has gored three times, you previously are only liable for Chatzi Nezek, but now that the animal has gored three times, from this point going forward, this is a crazy animal, and now there's a new obligation, which is called Nezek Shalem. Chatzi Nezek was the obligation that once was when the animal was not a registered damager, but now that the animal has done it three times, So now that the animal is muchzak as being an animal that gores, so now there's a new liability. It's called nezek shalim. Or maybe no. Maybe when the animal matriculates to becoming a muad, meaning basically the nezek shalom payment that's required is in addition to the tam. Meaning the animal, you always have to pay chatzi nezek. That's the base amount that you have to pay for all damages that's done. And then when the animal becomes a muad, the Torah adds on the second half. But the first half is just a residual of the animal being a tam. Rav Yehuda's position is, we're going to take this latter approach, that the animal being a muad is just simply adding on a second half to the already existing first half. So that means that according to Rav Yehuda, every muad is really one half plus one half. But the first half is the old tam. The second half is the new muad. And that means now that from Rav Yehuda's standpoint, every animal which is a muad that's doing damage is a composite tam muad. First half being tam, second half being muad. Now, in this regard, it becomes very significant. Why? Because that means when the animal damages, I have to analyze the damage from the two standpoints, meaning the first half and the second half. Now, Savarlak Rav Yehuda Damar Muad Sagile Bishmer Pechusa. And now, Chiddush number two. And that is Rav Yaakov subscribes to Rav Yehuda's position that when it comes to a Muad, you only need basic Shmira. But now, you have to put point number one and point number two together. And if you think about it, you realize, oh, this is interesting. So now that means that, yes, it's true that according to Rav Yehuda, for a Muad, I only need basic Shmira. But remember, go back to the first point, which is that a Muad is really a composite of a Tam and a Muad. The first half is Tam, and that goes unchanged. The second half is now the Muad. So when I need Shmir Pechusa, that's only on the second half. But as far as the first half is concerned, since the first half is a tam, and since the tam, according to Rav Yehuda, always needed Shmira Me'ula, it still requires Shmira Me'ula. So as this animal is damaging, and the owner only provided basic Shmira for this animal, so yes, he'll be excused from the second half, but he will be liable for the first half. And now one other point to insert over here. And then just one more point to wrap it all up, and that is that Rav Yaakov of the Braisa subscribes to the opinion of the Chachamim. Do I collect from the estate for a tam? The answer is yes, I do. I collect from the estate even though the animal that damages is only a tam, and from that we'll subscribe to the opinion of the Chachamim. Simchas argues with the Chachamim, but Rabbi Yaakov is subscribing to the Chachamim's position. So, that is a mouthful. To quickly summarize, Rav Yaakov, who says that for the time that you're going to be paying chatzi nezek, so Rav explains Rav Yaakov that he's talking about a muad, not a tam, and why you're paying chatzi nezek. So three reasons why you're going to be paying chatzi nezek. One, when an animal matriculates from being a tam to a muad, it's the tam is still there. It's just that the muad is adding on the second half of the obligation. Two, in terms of Shmira, for a Muad, you only need Shmira Pechusa. For a Tam, you need Shmira Me'ula. And the owner over here only provided Shmira Pechusa, not Shmira Me'ula. And so therefore, he'll be excused, he'll be exempt from having to pay damages on the second half. But because the first half is still the Tam portion of the animal, so therefore on the first portion, you need to do Shmira Me'ula. So therefore, you're obligated on the first half. And finally, three, Rav Yaakov, this is Rav's explanation, Rav Yaakov subscribes to the Chacham's position that I do collect from the estate the tam portion of the payment. Okay. Amale Abaye Velo Pligi. So Abaye says to Rava, but I don't understand. V'hatanyu will not done by Shosheher Shotvikatan Shenagach Rav Yehuda Mechayv Rav Yaakov Omer Chatzi Nezek. Now, we have a second Braisa, and in the second Braisa, Same point by Rav Yaakov that you pay chatzi nezek, but we're now learning in the second braisa that Rav Yehuda disagrees with Rav Yaakov. Now remember, for Rava to have said his pshat, he had to bank on the fact that Rav Yaakov agrees with Rav Yehuda not once, but twice. And now in the second Braisa, by his quoting, we have now Rav Yaakov disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda. So this poses a problem to Rava's Pshat. Amar Rava Bar Ula Mashachai Rav Yehuda Pirush Rav Yaakov. So what Rava Bar Ula will say in defense of Rava's Pshat is that I know it looks like there's a debate in the second Braisa. There's no debate. Rav Yehuda said that there's a liability. And what Rav Yaakov was explaining was how much liability. So Rav Yaakov is just simply explaining the opinion of Rav Yehuda, and they're not arguing. It's really not the simple pshat of the Braisa, but if you're going to defend Rav, you have to say something. So this is the pshat that's offered in the second Braisa. Ulam bai damra pligi ba mai pligi. Now, Abai doesn't buy into this. Abai thinks that they're arguing. So the Gemara wants to know, according to Abaye, what is the Nekudah Machlokas? Amal Chahalcha b'Maiskin b'Muad v'lo Natre Klav. So Abaye will tell you that the animals are Muad, and really no Shmir was done whatsoever. Rav Yaakov Savalak Rav Yehuda Bechado Palegala Bechado. So now, as far as Rav Yaakov is concerned, so he's going to agree with Rav Yehuda on one point and disagree on another point. Sever Rav Yehuda Bechada Deal, Rav Yehuda Sever Tzad Tamus Bim Kama Amades. So on one hand, Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that the Tamus remains. When the animal matriculates from being a Tam to being a Muad, so the Tam, the first half of the animal, still identifies as a Tam. And then Upalagala Bechada Deal, Rav Yehuda Sever Ma'amidim La Ma'apetropos La Tam La Gavos Miguf of Rav Yaakov Sever Ein Ma'amidim Ein Ma'amidim And then as far as the point of dissension, this is where Rav Yaakov disagrees with Rav Yehuda. In that, Rav Yaakov's of the opinion that you don't go collecting from the estate the tam portion of the payment. So the tam portion of the payment, which is still intact, which still identifies itself even after the animal becomes a muad, so that still remains uncollectible, and the only thing therefore you can collect is going to be the second half. And that is the machlokus between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yaakov of the Braisa, according to Abaye. So the Gemara now is just going to make one more comment about Abaye and Rava's understanding of the Braisa. So the Gemara says, according to Abaye, it actually works out beautiful. Meaning, as we just offered the pshat in the Braisa, and the machlokas between Rav Yaakov and Rav Yehuda in the Braisa, so according to Abaye, fine. I understand what they're arguing about. Ela la Rava damar lo pligi. So now, according to Rava, there's no debate. Meaning, Rav Yehuda says that there's a liability, and Rav Yaakov is just simply telling you how much. But there's no debate. So the Gemara says, fine, there's no debate. But you know what? We are giving, in the Pshat and the Braisa, such a sophisticated explanation. The Gemara says, Ademukala b'muad, nukma b'tam. So the Gemara says, here's the part I'm just not following. Rather than saying that the Braisa is talking about an animal which is a muad, why don't we just offer such a simple suggestion, and that is that the animal's a tam? And that's why the Braisa says that you pay chatzi nezek. And the Braisa is then introducing us to one chiddush. The one chiddush is that a tam payment is collectible from the estate, which we at, huh? Yeah. In other words, yeah. And then right. And then we're subscribing to the chachamim's viewpoint of ma'amid and ma'apetropis in order to collect from the tam. So e l'rev Yehuda da avel shmir pchusa v'lo avel shmir meula and e l'rev Elazar ben Yaakov da avel shmir klal. And as far as the failure of shmira, so you could take your pick, whichever position you follow. You follow like Rav Yehuda, fine. You didn't do the best shmira. And if you follow the Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, so you didn't do basic shmira. D'tanya Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Echatam Vechemua Shesharmam Shmira Pechusa Pturim. According to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, basic shmira, both by the tam and by the muad, will exempt you from liability. V'akamash malan Rav Yaakov Damah Midam Lama Apotropos Latam Lagavos Megufo. And then, again, just a simple pshat in the Braisa. The Chatzi Nezek is going on the fact that the animal's a tam and it damaged. And the one chiddush is that it's still collectible even though the children are orphans. So
he's saying the same thing as a problem
in the... Yeah, that's it. In other words...
Why would he need that?
Well, that's going to be... Right. And essentially what the Gemara is going to answer is, Rava, if Rava were to offer that pshat in the Braisa, so really you're reduced to that one singular chiddush, which we knew already. Okay. So, Amar Lei Hachi Kamar. Chada di is beitarte taima. So basically, Rava's answer is, no, I'm going to say a pshat in the Braisa, that within the pshat in the Braisa has, well, the Gemara here refers to as two, but as we actually know, because we just went through the sugya, three chidushim in there. Meaning, basically, Rav is saying, my pshat has much more to offer in terms of chidushim. Number, again, just quickly to recap. Number one, the idea that when an animal, in other words, again, the pshat the Rava says that the animal is a muad. So number one, even though the animal is matriculated to being a muad, the first half tom portion remains identified as a tom. Two, you can go ahead and in order to exempt yourself from liability once the animal is a muad, all you need is basic shmira. You don't need shmira meula. But because the first half is still a tam, for the first half you need shmir meula. For the second half you only need shmir p'chusa. And finally, number three, so when this animal damages, you're going to be exempt from the second half, liable for the first half, and even though the children are yesomim, we're still going to collect from the estate because maminam apotropos, because we provide apotropos. So those are the for Rava three chidushim that come out of this brisa. Ravina Amar, and now we're going to offer another pshat in the brisa altogether, and that is Ravina says reshus mashani kebeinayhu. So the Gemara says that simple pshat in the brisa would be when there's a changing of the guard. When there's a changing of ownership, does that reset the animal from being a muad back to being a tam? So over here, we're talking about a scenario in the Brisa in which the animal, the owner of the animal was mentally checked out or mentally immature and then mentally came back or grew up. So Rav Yehuda Savar Harei Becheskaso. So the Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that it remains in its chazaka, meaning just because there's a new ownership in town does not change the fact that the animal is a muad. And in this regard, we can have Rav Yehuda line up with, as we learned on the previous Amud, the opinion of Rav Yossi. Meaning Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi will now agree that once an animal, even though an animal has changed owners, the animal remains a muad. And Rav Yaakov Savar Rishus Mishan, and Rav Yaakov is of the opinion that a Rishus, a change of ownership, is going to reset and the animal remains will go back to becoming a tam. And that's the simple pshat in the Braisa, on the bottom of the Amud, between Rav Yaakov and Rav Yehuda, where Rav Yehuda says you pay Nezek Shalem, and Rav Yaakov says you pay Chati Nezek, and now, according to Ravina, we could say a really simple pshat. That is, that the person was mentally out of town or mentally immature. Now the person has regained his cognitive ability or the child grew up. And now the question is, are we back to being a tam? Rav Yehuda would say no, and Rav Yaakov would say yes. Okay. Ad kan. Admittedly, that was a lot of juggling. Meaning, if once we're comfortable with the shitas, you understand all the juggling that was occurred. But that was a lot of juggling between many shitas in order to arrive at various explanations of the braisas. Tanu Rabbanan. Apotropos mishalmim min aliyah ve'in mishalmim kofer. If you set up now a custodian who is now responsible for an estate, and damage was done, so mishalmim min aliyah. So you have to pay for the damage that's done. And like we already explained, so that means now that the apotropos himself is going to be fronting the money in order to pay for the full damage that's done by the muad. But the Braisa tells us that is the responsibility of the apotropos, but not kofer. The animal now has killed somebody. And the Torah tells us that when the animal kills, so and it's a muad, so the owner of the animal has to pay a kofer payment. Now, in English, it doesn't translate well. We can call it, I know in the English they translate it as a ransom, but basically, you have to pay for the loss of life. It is the only time in the Torah where there's a requirement where you are not personally responsible for the death of somebody, but your property killed somebody, And the Torah basically says that you have to make some sort of financial remuneration over the death of that individual. Okay, this is what's called kofar. So now, what we're learning together in the Braisa is that this does not fall under the responsibility of the apotropos. The apotropos will have to pay for nezik liability, but not for wrongful death. So, ein mishal ben kofar. So, man tana kofar kapar v'yasmelav b'nei kapar ninu. So the Gemara now is trying to piece together, how do we get to this point? Why should it be that the apotropos does not have to pay the kofar payment? So basically what the Gemara now is going to entertain is the following discussion. The word kofar, actually in Hebrew, is very synonymous with the word kapara. One can easily argue, which the Gemara is about to do, that really, when you're paying the kofar payment, why is the Torah having you pay kofar? Because as a way of providing some form of kapara, it provides atonement. It's a way of paying your way out of death. Now, again, just to be clear, you didn't kill anybody, but your animal did. But still, your property was involved in the death of somebody. So it's a way of you cleaning the slate with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So by you paying the kofar, that provides a kapara. But really, you're an apotropos. You're not the owner of the animal. The owner of the animal is the estate. So really, the children are the ones who own it. But they're children. Meaning, do they need a kapara? And what the Gemara is arguing right now is, no. They're not bar mitzvah. They're not b'nei chiyuvim. They're not liable, and therefore they don't need a kapara. And just in general, it's a wonderful discussion. Wonderful meaning interesting discussion in terms of when children are, you know, when they're underage, when they're not b'nei and bas mitzvah. So b'nei and b'nos mitzvah. So do they? In other words, we certainly know they're not going to be punished, but do they have any kind of spiritual liability for that which they do wrong? So the simplest answer is no. This Gemara certainly points in that direction. That not even a kapara. They don't even have an atonement that they need to worry about. So the Gemara says, V'yasmi la b'nei kapar ninu. So the Gemara now is suggesting that explains why the apotropos doesn't have to pay the kofar payment. Because kofar is really a function of kapara. The real owner of these animals are children. Children are not b'nei chiyuvim ninu, and that's why the apotropos doesn't have to pay kofar. To which the Gemara says, Amar chista, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruchi, Detanya. So the Gemara says that basically what we're going to try to do is line this up together with the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel, son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, says the following. Detanya. V'nasan pidyonav sho. The Torah says that when your animal killed somebody, so you have to give pidyonav sho, the redemption of his soul. Torah uses a pronoun. It's ambiguous. Who's the pronoun making reference to? Your two options are the owner of the animal that did the killing or the victim. And the Gemara says, that's a machlokas. Demei nizak, according to the Tanakama, it's the victim. The victim who was killed, so you're going to be paying pidyon nafsho. Meaning, you assess how much he was worth prior to his death, and that's how much you're going to pay. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer, demei mazik. And according to Rabbi Shmuel, no. You pay the value of the mazik, meaning the owner of the animal who was responsible for the wrongful death. So you pay his value. Now, ostensibly, the debate over here between Rabbi Shmuel and the Tanakhama is really a question of, why am I paying? According to Rabbi Shmuel, you know why I'm paying? Well, I'm paying my value. Now, I'm not the one who died. The victim was the one who died. So why am I paying my value, the owner of the animal? Because kapara. I'm providing a kapara by paying my value. Whereas according to the Tanakhama, where you're paying the Demei Nizak, so the reason why I'm paying his value is because somehow I'm going to make, I know it sounds funny, but you know it sounds a little strange, but somehow I'm going to make financially good on the loss to that family. Okay. So, I mean, lahavdil, but in this country we have this idea in our judicial system that if you're responsible for the death of somebody, so somehow they're going to come out to a number of how much you should pay the family, you know, for you know, for remuneration. Okay, so basically that's what the Gemara is now entertaining. And so when the Braisa says the apotropos doesn't have to pay kofar, it's because the Braisa subscribing to Rabbi Shmuel's viewpoint that really the kofar payment is a kapara, reflected in the viewpoint of Rabbi Shmuel, that whose value do I pay? The value of the mazik, not the nizak. So my la b'hakim eflegi, and the Gemara now sets up the machlokas. Rabbanan savar kufar mamonu, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rav Yochanan ben Broka savar kofar kapara. This is exactly the debate in terms of what the nature of kofar is. Amar Rapapa lo. So Rapapa says, I do not think you're right in terms of the pshat of this machlokas. Dekule amar kufar kapara. Really, the truth of the matter is that when you're paying the kofar payment, the purpose of the kofar payment is to provide atonement. It is a kapara. And again, just as a parenthetical note, it's kind of screaming out, the word itself is kind of screaming this out. The Torah calls it a kofar. So it's synonymous with the word kapara. So v'hacha b'hakim iflegi, and the Gemara says, and this is the machlokas. Rabbanan savra b'dinizek shaminim, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rav Yochanan ben Broka, savra b'damazik shaminim. And the only debate is now, basically, when we make an assessment of how much to pay, so it's going to be a machlokas in terms of whose market value we're looking at, the mazik or the nizak. Meaning the why in terms of why we're paying, everyone agrees, it's a kapara. In terms of what you're going to pay, or how much you're going to pay, that's the machlokas. And my time at the Rabbana, Nemar Shis Lamata, Nemar Shis Lamala, Malahalan, Bidinizak, Afkan Bidinizak. So the Gemara says, and really now, in terms of addressing the question of based on whose value I pay, so basically it's drashas, it's psukim, according to Rabbi Shmuel, according to the Tanakama, so you have the word shisa above, you have the word shisa below, right, by kapara, the Torah says, b'chol asher yushas alav, and previously Rashi brings down the psukim, it says shisa regarding the nizak, that's regarding the demei vlados, so you see that the word shisa is in reference to the one who was killed, the victim. And Rav Yishmael ben Osher, Rav Yochanan ben Broka, savar, v'nasam pidyon avshok siv, and according to Rav Yishmael, look at the pasuk carefully, it says, you're going to give pidyon avshok. He wants to redeem his soul. Who wants a redemption? The person who died doesn't want a redemption. He's dead. The owner of the animal wants a redemption. So clearly you're going to be basing it on his market. And Rabbanan in Pidyon Avshoh Ksiv Miu Ki Shaiminan Midanizak Shaiminan. And Rabbi Shmuel says, look, I agree. Correction. The Chachamim say, I agree. Obviously, the one who wants the pigeon is the mazik. But in terms of the appraisement and whose market value we're going to attach it to, we're going to attach it to the nizak based on the commonality of the language of yushas alav and the previous pasuk. Okay, let's go a little bit further for this morning. Mishabech le Rav Nachman b'derav Acher by Yaakov the Adam Gadol who Rava was telling Rav Nachman, this Rav Acher by Yaakov, he's a great man. We have this introduction in the Gemara and other occasions, where basically a little bit of hype. Now, generally speaking, I don't have encyclopedic knowledge. But I do have very clear memories in the Gemara where sometimes when people are introduced with this kind of accolade and this kind of hype, so they don't live up to the hype. And it's true in life in general, that when you hype something up, it's just not going to live up to the hype. So, but anyway, Rav is telling Rav Nachman, this Rav Acher by Yaakov, he's an Adam Gadol, he's a great man who, okay, great, I'm looking forward to meeting him. Next time he comes here, I'd love to meet him. Buy me name Milsa. So now, instead of Rav Acher by Yaakov, okay, ask some questions. Basically, let's see what you know. So, buy me a shur shul shnei shutvim ketsa mishamim kofar. So, let's say I have a shur that's owned by a partnership. Two people are partners, 50% partners in an animal, and the animal has killed somebody, and the animal was a muad. And so now there's a kofar responsibility. But there are now not one owner to the animal, but a pair of owners to the animal, each one owning 50% share. So, how exactly is this going to work? Mishalim high kofar, v'high kofar, kofar echad amarachmana. So are we expecting each one to pay kofar, but the Torah only describes one kofar payment going to the family. V'lo shnei kofrim. So high chatzi kofar, v'high chatzi kofar. Now do you expect each partner to be paying only half kofar, but kofar shalom el marachman v'lo chatzi kofar. But at the same time, however, in terms of the responsibility to pay, the Torah is expecting you, the owner of the animal, to pay full kofar. So it's going to be we're kind of in a catch 22. On one hand, the Torah is expecting the recipient to receive only one kofar, and the Torah is expecting the payer to pay only one kofar. But here I have two owners of the animal. So how exactly is this going to work? So that's the first question they asked Rav Nachman. He didn't give Rav Nachman a chance to think about the question. Adi asavikama ayin be amalei tanan. And I'll ask you now a second question. And that is chayve erchem emashkin oso. A person made a pledge to the Beis HaMikdash, and after receiving a couple letters in the mail reminding him, first reminder, second reminder, third reminder, right, you owe him the money. So basically the Gizbar said enough already, and the Gizbar has the right to come into your house and take some collateral against your obligation. However, if you're obligated to bring a carbon chatas to the base of Mikdash, Gizbar is not going to come in and Gizbar is not going to take any type of collateral. And the reason why is very simple. You're incentivized to bring the carbon chatas. You're not going to receive a kapara until you bring the carbon chatas. So because you're incentivized to bring it, so the Gizbar does not have to worry about prompting you by coming into your house and taking things away from you. So chayve kofrin mai. So now let's say you have a kofar obligation. So which category is this going to fall under? Is this going to be my kevin de kaparu kechatas vashem dame mechamechamer ilave velo baim emashkene? On one hand, we can make the argument of, well, you know, he needs a kapara. And just like by Chatas and Asham, he's incentivized and therefore we don't have to motivate him. Here too, he's not going to have a full kapara until he pays his kofar. Odilma kevin de lechavrehu debay miyasve le mamona hu velo legavoa hu velo chamer ale ubay mashkenuse. On the other hand, says the Gemara, consider that when it comes to a chatas, it's going on the mizbech. It's going directly to God. So I see this as my kapara. But when it comes to kofar, it's going out of my pocket and it's going into someone else's pocket. And yes, it is providing a kapara, but meanwhile, I'm paying somebody else that money. And so therefore, I may not view it so much as a kapara. So, inami, and so therefore, I would need to be incentivized. Inami came into lo chet, omemonehu de azik, lo chamer milse ilave, ubay mashkenuse. And a second argument why it is that he's not gonna feel the need to pay kofar so much. He didn't kill somebody, his property killed somebody. So that is even less of a reason, a motivator, that would get him to have to pay. So, Amrle Shafkan Istagir Bekamaisa. And to that, Rav Nachman says, slow down. Ask me the first question about the partners owning the animal and whether or not the partners are going to be paying kofar on the animal or not. I didn't even get to answering your first question. Now you're asking me a second question of whether or not we're taking a mashkon from somebody who owes a kofar. Do we compare it to erchin? Do we compare it to chatas v'ashamos? And so basically, slow down. I don't have an answer to your first question. I don't have an answer to your second question. I'm surmising that Rav Nachman was impressed with Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. That's my guess.